our hearts ring to get the name of love. All we do is everyone forget. Never fear gladness, nothing but gladness, something I'll never forget. Oh, my low listens unto my heart. I believe this is a recipe, it's destiny. I'm singing this song cause I don't know you belong. You replace it, my heart. Whoa, 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 whoa. Yeah.
Okay, that was totally worth answering Gwen's three questions. Okay, so...
Okay, welcome to the Macross Speaker Podcast, Western Edition. I am your host, your sometime host, Richard, also known on the forums as Goobaba. And to my left is...
Tom Bateman.
Also known on the forums as...
Tom Bateman.
Oh, okay. And next to him is...
Chie.
Chie, also known as...
Chie.
Okay, and next to her is...
Renato.
Okay, and next to Renato is...
Do you want to do him?
No!
He's tired.
Also known on the forums as...
Nioka.
Okay, and next to Annika is...
Kyle, also known as Falcon KPD.
And next to Kyle...
Jasnik.
Also known as...
Jason C, for those that can read.
And next to Jason...
Cher.
Okay, also known as...
Reflex Point.
Oh my god.
Whole name.
Okay.
Lone ass soldier boy.
So it is July 5th. 2015, we have just finished Anime Expo, and we are all gathered together here for an episode of the Western edition of Macross Speaker Podcast, which I assume will have much less news than the Japanese version, although we do have Renato here.
Yay. Yes. Yay! Special guest.
Special guest Renato, who hey. Is
many,
who
many
is in here because...
What am I doing here?
Yeah, well, you were doing a panel.
Yeah, I see a space fold situation.
So let's get into Anime Expo news. Renato, how was your panel?
I don't know. You guys tell me. I was kind of busy doing it.
I wasn't there for a very special reason. I'll get to in a bit.
That's a shame, actually. We missed you.
I'm sorry. I wanted to go.
But yeah, I did my best. I planned it for quite a while. And I will say one thing.
We didn't introduce the cat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's mad because we didn't introduce him. That's Dylan in the background, if you can hear him.
Also known as, on the Macross World Forums?
Nyan Nyan.
We need to make an account for Dylan now.
He'll ask all the questions of why.
Why? Why?
So how was Renato's panel?
Well, I'll start by saying, first of all, it was supposed to be an hour... But then when I went to the first panel on the first day, the first panel I went to was the Cannon Busters one by LeSean Thomas and Thomas Romain. And I realized then and there that these panels actually take quite a while to get started. So I was doing some last-minute alterations in my hotel room and cutting stuff out because I knew I would go over time if I actually did a one-hour if I planned for a one-hour thing.
Right.
Because it wasn't going to be that. And even then, we ended, like, right on time. No time for questions, so it's a shame. But anyway, so you guys tell me your impressions.
So, first off, what was the title of your panel and a brief summary?
Oof, okay. The title of my panel was New Directions in the Japanese Animation Industry. And it's really about the generation gap between the first post-war Japanese... population boom, the baby boomers, and the basically their children, so the second baby boomer, what happened was that the first baby boomer generation were the ones to develop Japan's popular culture, or rather the seeds of Japan's popular culture industries as we know them today. In particular, with revolutionary things such as Tezuka coming in, and then you know, younger generations building up on that, like shoujo manga revolutions, etc. And then the next generation really is because Tezuka starts making TV anime, starting with Astro Boy. We get a new generation who are raised on TV anime, right? So we're talking about people who were born at the end of the 50s, in the early 60s, and they were starting to watch cartoons and growing up with cartoons. And then at the end of the 1970s, for example, you've got this new otaku culture. And so the late 70s, early 80s is this big anime boom, and animation is considered a medium through which to sell products, and that is usually either robot toys for boys, or magical girl wand things,
maho shoujo
stuff for girls. And I think that the needs of the sponsor companies and the wants of the people who are starting to watch these shows, who are increasingly becoming older people who were not playing with toys, otaku guys, were starting to diverge. And really, that's the basis of it, right? So, I don't know, it's not really anything that I can talk about in a couple of sentences. But anyway, I hope it was at least rather interesting.
Okay, well, something I would like to say about Renato's panel is that I learned more in about an hour than I did through my entire 2 years of college. His panel was more insightful and more entertaining and more educational than a lot of the schooling I've had, and I just wanted to say thank you for putting that on, and it really meant a lot, and it was very, very informative.
It's my pleasure.
For a panel that was called The Future of Animation, I learned a lot of history. And I appreciated that, because at the end of the panel, you went a little bit into the future of it, but yeah, I felt like the history really told me what was going
to
happen.
I really wanted to contextualize that. And I will say that the panel title was not my idea. I had a different title, and the organizer, Mikhail, changed it from... Oh, he's Michelle, if you know him.
Oh, stop fitting.
I'm kidding.
What was your original title?
It was the products versus the production, because anime was a tool to sell products, and the production refers to the people who are involved in the actual creative process. And what I wanted to set up was there was a growing rivalry there that they were disagreeing with each other.
So. And the reason I wasn't at his panel was because I was actually working, which is something that I wasn't really expecting. So the con started on Thursday. Wednesday night, I suddenly get a Facebook message from Adrian, also known as Save, sometimes Save Robotech. Or just call him Indiana Macross. But he sent me a message saying, hey, are you free tomorrow? Or he said, are you going to Anime Expo tomorrow? And I said, yeah. And he was like, would you be willing to work at the satellite booth? Which was an instant hell yeah from me. Satellite, of course, is the... basically Kawamori's animation company. So they did Zero, they did Frontier. They've done a lot of other really good stuff, which I have had the theme songs drummed into my brain over the last 4 days about. For the first time, they were at Anime Expo because Thomas Roman, who is the co-creator of Oman Star Racers and Baskash, and a designer for What, both of those?
Bodacious
and,
Space Pirates.
Bodacious Space Pirates.
Symphogear.
Symphogear and Space Dandy. And among other things. He was a guest of honor at Anime Expo. And so Satellite got a booth because he was the guest of honor. And they figured, well, you know, we might as well bring... Because they have a whole bunch of books about these series, like, that they have published themselves. And so they brought all of those. And so it was basically hawking. There's the Thomas Roman art book, which is called Lost in Anime, and which is really amazing, and which he was signing throughout the weekend. There was an AKB 0048 book. There were a couple of Bodacious Space Pirates books. There were there was a Nobunaga the Fool book, and they also had a bunch of T-shirts designed by Thomas Roman for various series. So I was actually manning the booth most of the time, so I missed all of his panels. But you should totally follow his Twitter, because he does tutorials.
Yes, I saw that.
And
very good.
Yeah, and apparently they're amazing. We had people coming up who were like, "Yeah, I've never seen any of these series, but I follow his tutorials and I love them."
Twitter is Thomas in Tokyo, right?
Yes,
Thomas in Tokyo. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that he is also working on, which he revealed at one of the panels, even though it's already, I think, been announced, is that he's doing some of the designs for the upcoming Macross series.
Delta.
Did you say Delta?
Delta.
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 Oh my god, Annika, I think they're talking about Delta.
Delta.
Delta. There better be some Destroids in this.
But, Richard, Tomas said to keep that in between you and him, in the panel.
Well, I wasn't at the panel.
Oh, so he did mention that at the second day panel. I don't know if I wasn't there for the Cannon Busters panel, but
he
know he did
that
mention
that.
Yeah.
No,
he didn't say what though. I mean, it could be background art because his background art is gorgeous.
Yeah,
pure right. Yeah, we don't know what he's doing for it.
Pure speculation, right?
Yeah, no, we don't know what he's doing for it. And really, no, I'm not trying to keep things secret. I honestly don't know what he's doing for it. But he, I was introduced to him by the Satellite people who I know as a Macross fan, and his response was essentially, "Oh yeah, that's what they yanked me away from to come here."
That's a good impression. He sounds kind of like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I spent 4 days with the Satellite crew, which was one of the higher-ups and one of the producers of Quarion Logos and Tomas. And, man, the new Macross series, you don't even know.
None of us do.
Because I don't even know. They told me nothing.
Did you try?
Well, I tried in the Japanese way.
The Japanese way.
Which is that you don't ask questions about it, but they know you're a fan, and they're sitting there next to you, and you just say, "Yeah, you know, I'm really looking forward to the new Macross series."
I love your artwork.
This is amazing. This is really great. I love Macross. And you're waiting for them to say something, and for probably the first time in my life, it didn't work. they've really got this under wraps.
French.
Yeah.
Nope.
The cat's trying to get on the table.
Let him party with us, man. He's cool.
So I learned some other things. Like the fact that Shoji Kawamori is not working on Aquarion Logos. Because he's too busy working on Macross.
and the fact that Tomas was yanked from working on Macross to come to Anime Expo. But other than that, yeah, no. I kept expecting for some revelation to come, and it didn't come.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
We're all sorry.
Well, the thing is, I did learn some things about other parts of Macross, but I pretty much can't talk about them, so it's basically the same. You know, it's like, I know them, but I can't say anything.
All right, Kevin. No, I'm just kidding.
Right, yeah. But, no, it was a great experience. It was, it really gave me a real taste of the anime industry.
Hashtag.
But, yeah, it was, I was with Satellite for 4 days, and I realized that, man, there are so many shows that they've done that I really need to see. For anyone out there who hasn't seen any of these things, there were people who would come up, not many, just a few every day, but there would be, like, we had a video running of all of Tomas's work for Satellite over the last 10 years. And it had the Oban Star Racers theme playing over it. So that forever now, when I hear Akino from Bless forcing, you will have your chance to fly, da 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 da, I will think of this weekend. people would come up and see it and just say, Oban Star Racers. I loved that show. It was so good. And then, like, every day we would have at least 3 Symphogear fans come up and just be like, I want Symphogear. Give me some Symphogear. And it's like, yeah, we had a book for Symphogear, but it's out of print now. And they're like, oh, you need to make another one. I'm so excited for the new series. So these seem to be things that are not widely popular, but the people who like them really, really like them. But yeah, so working with Satellite at a con was a really great experience, and I would totally do it again next year. So please, 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 Anime Expo, bring someone from Satellite as a guest of honor.
Awesome.
You're gonna tell them that they adopted you.
What?
That they adopted you. Your badge.
Oh, yeah, Richard has
a
new name.
And then there was my badge. Well, no, because the first day it was like, I was supposed to meet them outside. I was supposed to meet my contact from Satellite outside at 11, and I got there, and we were like, okay, meet outside the entrance. But then I realized that there were several entrances, so I kept walking from one to the other, and, and I ran into Renato, and it was getting to be, like, 11:15, and I didn't see anybody. And then it was getting to be 11:30, and I finally went in and said, look, I'm working at the Satellite booth, I don't have a badge yet, I'm supposed to meet them outside, but I don't know which entrance I'm supposed to meet them at. And the guy was, in great lazy American way, was just like, okay, go in. So I went in, and I went to I found the Satellite booth immediately, and nobody was there. And so I was just kind of sitting there, not sure what to do with all these unopened boxes around me, not sure what to do with them. And then finally they showed up, and then they had to get a badge for me. So they went back to get a badge, and when it came to me, it said Exhibitor, and then there was a big sticker on it said Satellite Incorporated. Richard Satellite. Which just sounded to me like a new wave 80s singer.
Totally so, Duran Duran.
Yeah, it was just like, ça plan pour moi, ça plan pour moi. So, yeah, Richard Satellite. If I ever come out with a new wave 80s single, 45 single, that will be my name. Awesome. So yes, I've been adopted by the company.
Richard Satellite and the Jazniks, I think, is the
yes. Yeah, I love the company so much, I changed my name. Okay.
Yeah, before we go on, I will say that Tomas's book is really good.
It's amazing.
I got a copy of it, and just looking through it and how the work is done, you know, from early on all the way through his later stuff is really, really good. So, and tying this to Macross, I have a lot of confidence. Whatever he does, I'm sure they've got a good staff so far. Just even in just that little bit that we know.
Right.
I feel pretty confident.
And I also met, what's his name?
LaShawn Thomas.
LaShawn Thomas.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Because they're both.
Yeah. Who's doing Cannon Busters, and Tomas Roman is also working on that, and that also looks like it's going to be really amazing. Again, I missed the panel. I missed every panel because I was in the Satellite booth.
Being
Richard Satellite, and someone did actually ask me the other day, "Is that your real name?"
She just said yes, man.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. But it was okay because right next to me was the Memorial Clover Z booth. And so I got to hear a lot of Memorial Clover Z also while being a thing. And that concert was good, right?
Oh, it was excellent. I loved it, and I gotta thank you for getting me hooked on their music now.
I've actually never heard of Momo Clo before this weekend, so that was my first concert of theirs I've been to, and I greatly enjoyed it.
Yeah.
They played Believe, so I
which I totally hadn't known was a Gundam Seed song until now.
Yeah.
Until Kyle turned to me and was like, "Wait, they did this song?" And it's like,
well, no, I knew they hadn't. I didn't know they covered it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was surprising. I don't really like Seed that much, but it's okay. I like the music.
They were great, but no Kiss.
Yeah, that was
Kiss
a problem because the Microsoft Theater, formerly the Nokia Theater, had a big sign saying MCZ, Memorial Clover Z, with Kiss. And so they had done a collaboration single. We were expecting it. Quinn's going to cut this all out. We were expecting it to be played, and we heard the song four times. Twice in video form, or three times in video form, once live.
Yeah. We heard it four times. They played it before the show. They played it before the show started. And then when the show started, it was their opening song.
Right.
And then later in the song, they actually sang it on stage. And then it was also the intermission song.
Right.
It's a good song.
Good song.
It's a good song, but yeah, Kiss came out and they were like, they had some cultural ambassador was giving them awards and everything. I was like, this is way too serious. What are they... This is, totally killing the buzz. What are they doing with this? And then I realized later, oh, they were doing this because this was the only time that members of KISS were actually appearing on stage to accept their award and say, oh, yeah, hello, Japan, we love anime. Thanks for the award. Bye.
Richard is so friggin' deadpan right now, too. That's the best part of this whole thing.
Members of KISS were pretty much, too.
Gene
Simmons didn't say anything. Doing an imitation of himself
Stanley
from Phantom of the
seems
Park.
To be in it. Gene Simmons didn't really say anything except for thank you.
Gene Simmons was like,
Paul Stanley
Domo.
Did all the talking.
Right, yes. Gene Simmons came out and was like, domo.
And then he accepted the award with one hand and was just...
And he was doing an imitation of himself from Phantom of the Park, where he didn't say anything either.
They didn't perform?
No.
They didn't perform at all.
No, nothing.
They just said, we love Momoklo, we love anime, domo arigato, minasan konbanwa, and they walked off.
Yeah. It was bullshit, man. I wanted to see Kiss live.
You told your father you were going to go to a Kiss concert.
I told my dad I was going to a Kiss concert to make it
less
weird.
You lied to your dad now.
You saw Kiss on stage.
I did.
Sans makeup. No makeup.
Yeah.
Decades later.
It's like seeing Kiss in the late 80s, early 90s then.
You know what? It was cool, seeing them physically there.
Mm-hmm.
But it would have been cooler to see them perform.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, everyone was expecting that, I assume.
Yeah, someone complained. I overheard someone complaining at the Momoclo booth today about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, right, because you were next door.
Yeah.
Yeah, and?
Well, they were just kind of like, oh, yeah, we're so sorry, you know. And that was that.
That almost was understandable.
Yeah. But my feeling is, they want to rock and roll all night and part of every day. And
but it was
that
night.
Concert happened at the part of the day that they don't want to rock and roll.
Richard, it was nighttime, though.
Yeah, they don't perform during
not in Japan.
Okay, you win this.
There's always a time of day where you don't want to rock and roll somewhere in the world.
Yeah.
You just gotta be...
You guys
gotta
are lame,
yourself,
man. You gotta have fun in life, man. This is... You guys are being lame.
Oh, I had fun with that show.
Yeah, I had fun with the show, too. Just
well, I didn't care about Kiss. Like, I was actually worried that Kiss was gonna take over the show and do all their stuff. So, actually, it was, like, perfect for me.
Spoken by a true fan.
I
don't want you to rain on Momoclo's party.
Right.
Yeah. I'll get back to the part where Gwen cuts us back in.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. So next on the schedule, Gwen, is the Models, Toys, and Manga.
We have one listener.
Yeah.
He really does listen us.
I think it says Macro's first volume 6 is first, but I think let's go to the STF-1 14000. Who's going to be talking about that?
So I want to talk about this kit because I have never really been too much of a fan of warship model kits. I've always been an aircraft builder. But I saw the 14000 kit at Fanime.
Who made it?
Bandai did. And
what?
I thought it was Hasegawa.
Hasegawa.
I'm so sorry.
You're fired.
Hasegawa did it. Okay. Hasegawa did it. Tenshi did the box art. It's a beautiful kit.
Kyle, you had one job.
And your girlfriend tricked you.
One job.
I am so sorry. I've been doing a lot of Bandai stuff today, and...
He did do a lot of Bandai stuff.
Forgive me. Anyway, so the kit itself, it was released, what, 2 months ago, if that?
I don't know.
It's pretty recent, right?
Yeah, it's recent, like two, three months.
Yeah. In the last podcast we did about the Hasegawa models, we were really looking forward to the SDF-1 release, and I finally got one, and I put it together, and it is like... When you compare it to building the VF-1 kit in terms of difficulty, it is like night and day. The SDF-1 kit was so beautiful to put together, and it is such... All the parts are actually color-molded, so if you don't want to paint it, you really don't have to, although I highly recommend it.
Did you paint yours?
I did. Okay. It's a really, really nice kit. If you guys are out there looking for an SDF-1 kit... I really think you should pick it up. Jason, you really should get one.
I assume by night and day, you meaning that the old Hasegawas were really complex and really hard to fit the pieces together.
Yeah, did you hear our last podcast about them? They were really... We were into detail about how horrible... They're not horrible, but they're not for inexperienced modelers.
I by no means consider myself inexperienced. I mean, I've had quite a bit of experience, and I...
The VF-1 is still...
I tried to put the Roy 1S Strike together.
Yeah.
Completely ruined that thing. Just parts wouldn't fit, they were starting to break off, and then... I just don't like 1-100.
Well,
the SDF-1, though, is...
Well, no, even Leonardo Flores had trouble with the 1... Yeah.
172, right. That's right.
Well, even Leonardo Flores had trouble with the 172 kit, so it's okay.
Where is Leo, anyway?
I don't know. I don't know if he's in the area.
He is in the area.
Is he?
Yeah, he's, little east.
Okay. Well, Leo, if you're listening to this...
Did you just say the Middle East?
No, I said... He's a little bit east.
Oh, I thought you said the Middle East.
No wonder he's not here.
I was like, yeah, that's not far.
No, we're talking about, like I think Riverside area.
Yeah. That's not far. Let's just... Go pick him up.
Yeah, let's get him down here. No, but anyway, Leo, if you're listening to this, pick up that SDF-1 kit because it is so worth it and it is such a sweetheart to build and it looks great.
Is that transformable?
It is not, but I think they're going to be putting out a Storm Attacker mode because the polycap tree only has enough polycaps for just the arm movements and it has a bunch of leftovers. So I think they're what they're going to do is they're going to do with the Storm Attacker with all of the articulation.
The legs and stuff.
Right? Yeah.
Okay.
So that is pretty much the rundown of the SCF-1.
Well, that sounds like a good viable option other than
it's really
spending like $600-$700 for the 1/3000.
Yeah.
Oh, like no, what I did.
Did you really?
I didn't spend that much, but I bought the kit version of that, which was I guess $140.
That's not
it's
too bad.
Still at Adrian's house. We tried to make it together. We have the Daedalus completed.
Oh, do you? Oh, it's the TV version.
As in... No, it's the... Do you remember, love?
You mean you have the arm to completed?
Yes.
Yes.
Did I say Daedalus?
You said Daedalus.
Oh, my God. I'm fired, too. We're dropping like flies.
Man.
Jason, you take over, and you can talk to Tom, and that's it. That's it. That's our podcast. I can't do it
anymore. Oh, yeah, and Tom is putting up a picture of the cover art by Tengen, which...
Oh, yeah, look.
Which he was able to show us at Macross Worldcon last year, and it's very beautiful artwork. I'd actually love to get a poster
did
of
he
that.
Show
that
Macross? I'm just gonna... What
I think
I do?
He did.
I think he showed the girl walk.
No, I think he did show that.
I don't remember seeing
very
it.
Very briefly.
I think what I might do with my box is I might cut the front out and actually frame it, because it is such a beautiful image.
Either way, whether he did or not, mm-hmm. that artwork needs to be...
That's one of his best.
Yeah.
It needs to be on, like, his third book.
Yes.
And he needs to make a third book, because his books are awesome.
It's like flying past Saturn, or his explosions going off, and it's so gritty, and it's awesome. But, yeah, if you're looking for an alternative to the Yamato VF... or SDF 1 and 1/3000 scale, I highly recommend getting the Hasegawa 1/4000 kit. It's totally worth it if you know how to build models. And even if you don't really know how to paint too well, you can still put it together and it'll look pretty decent on your shelf. It's color molded, and it's all good fun. It's not really that challenging either. It's a sweetheart.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what else do we have here? Oh, you wanted to talk about the new Bandai stuff. Well, you pretty much saw it, right?
Well, you're the one who bought it. The VF-19 Advance and the VF-171 with the Cheryl custom print is out.
Yeah, the grave picture. All right, well, let's go through the YF-19 Advance real quick. Well, I got this earlier last week.
Yeah.
Opened it up. It's... I can go through my first interpretations of it and my, you know, what I thought of it. First off, it's a gorgeous looking toy. Mm-hmm. It's much more tampo printed than the Arcadia version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I love. The pilot in there is highly detailed. I don't know if it's exactly 160 or whatnot, but I mean, it's kind of negligible compared to the Arcadia version. They're almost the exact same size. The figures, though, are slightly different, though. So that, I kind of, I like the bigger pilots. I like the Arcadia pilots better. Some of the gimmicks they had, the front landing gear, instead of just popping down as one solid piece, is actually... It actually folds in half, which... You know, it basically comes out of this little tiny pocket underneath it, which is really cool. It's a, pretty good engineering in that aspect. One thing I didn't like about it is there's that part where the air goes into the what ends up being what part of the chest part?
Yeah, yeah.
When you have it in fighter mode, they don't line up perfectly. You can see them kind of splintering off on the sides.
Really?
Yeah. So they're it's not perfect. What are you guys looking at?
Richard handed me an iPad which has the Comico Robotech the Micro Saga cover as seen on TV with Lin Kyle and Lin Min Mei.
Damn it, Mike.
Oh, is this Mike?
Going at it.
This Mike.
Is this Mike?
Oh, God.
With Hikaru, or Rick, sorry, looking really shocked. Minmay's mother looking really shocked, but the father looking rather approving.
That's my boy!
Like, that's kind of weird. And that painting on the wall is kind of bizarre.
Cousins, like, what can you say?
They've got a target. They've got a target on the wall, a bullseye.
Identical cousins all the way.
Okay, yeah, yes. Right, anyway, about
so. Anyways, back to the 19th. Another thing I didn't like was the what are they? The canards, right? Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, just yeah. Past the cockpit. In Arcadia's version, they would actually rotate,
right?
And the way they were angled, when you rotate them, they automatically went down.
Mm-hmm.
Where in this one, they're actually on a hinge, and so
they fold.
No. They have a tendency, if you're, you know, you want to be a kid and handle it and play with it, you know, swoosh it around a little bit in your hand, you just slightly touch one of them, they're not in line. And they have a tendency to easily plop down. Mine, luckily, are still tight because I haven't messed with it too much, but that's another issue.
When did you get it? Like, 2 weeks ago or something?
No, it was just, God, when did I pick it up? I think it was Tuesday.
Oh, really?
I want to say, yeah, last Tuesday. So,
well, I hope it lasts.
I hope so. You know, I haven't put on the armor yet. I've been reading on the forums that,
Oh, really?
You know, there have been people that have been having an issue, you know, like, Really? Well, how do I get the armor on the leg with the...
Yeah, I don't know. The thing about these recent Bandai releases, which I haven't been getting anymore, well, Kyle's totally destroying us.
Yeah.
I just knocked over a DVD. It's cool.
Is that they're way over-engineered.
Yeah.
In my opinion, especially the F-17,
yeah,
like that whole chest is just pure BS.
Well, you
like,
broke one, didn't you?
I didn't break one of those. No.
Oh, okay.
Well, they're pretty beefy toys too. They have a lot of diecast in them.
The F-17? Oh no, 171. Sorry.
Oh,
oh,
oh
yeah. Oh,
those, I was
those,
gonna say
yeah.
What?
The chest.
Maybe you should flash on. That would probably help. But I don't want to blind
them. And everybody knows about the issues with those.
Yeah,
but
they're still nice looking though. They look good.
They look good.
Yeah, well that leads into the new 171. I don't even know who's the pilot. What's the pilot's name?
He's that guy you see.
Mashida.
Annika.
Huh?
No. Mashida is the regular VF-171 from the manga. Hun, which pilot is it that? Describe the pilot you see who flies that one 171 that gets wrecked super hard.
The little Shota boy that's behind Alto who, like, the camera pans to and I totally thought was going to be the main character after Alto, like, dies in a horrific death. Or so I thought he was going to in the next episode.
I don't remember any of this.
There's a shot where, like, Alto...
It was
and,
when
like,
SMS leaves.
All the SMS guys are all, like, lined up and, like, ready to go. And Alto's being all, like, super bitter and serious because Ranka's, like, betrayed humanity. And he, like, stomps off and his ponytail waves in the wind. And the camera stays and pans this little Shota boy who's all like, Alto-senpai, where are you going? And I was just all like, why did the camera stay on this boy? He's gonna be important.
And
then he dies terribly.
He dies brutally and a ghost rips him to pieces. You're trying to put the pieces together here, Renata, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so episode... it's like right after the SMS leaves the Frontier and Alto joins
Dude,
up.
Dude, I haven't seen that show since it aired. And we're... I looked at my watch the other day and it was 2015... And apparently, so my watch says 2015 today. And apparently, that was 7 or 8 years ago. So
I'm
I don't
sorry.
Remember. And when you say SMS leaves, you've already lost me. Doesn't matter. I'll go back to it eventually.
Okay. Kathy?
Well,
Kathy?
Anyway, it's
Kathy.
That guy. He gets wrecked brutally, and it's pretty glorious.
But does he really have like that shell picture on the back of his?
I want to
yes,
say
yes.
Yes,
there is because screen caps that people took where it's on there.
Is it really?
That's
yes.
Weird.
Yeah.
Because I thought that was an original Bandai thing that they just made to milk them all. I mean, they obviously did, but I didn't know it was in the show.
He's that one guy the ghost like stops in front of, and he's like freaking out and everything, and the ghost just lights him up. It just runs its machine guns through his Bataroid and just blows him to pieces.
Wow. Nice.
Is that
yeah.
Did Manda make it so that because they knew people would break their overly complex toys?
So if that one breaks,
yeah, it's
then accurate. I'm like, dude, I'm just playing out Frontier.
It's a diorama.
I'm just playing it out. But yeah, it's the painting on it's good. I'm honestly, I'm scared to death to even like take it out of the thing. I took it out last night because I got that one. When did I get that one? Thursday. I got that one on Thursday.
Yeah.
And I didn't open it until last night. We opened it up, and I was just like, dude, here, hold it, Kyle.
And I was like, Jason, I don't want to hold it. I'll break it or something.
And I was like, okay, picture on
it's Cheryl, a Cheryl.
Yeah, yeah, she's great. She's hot.
Taking time.
Let's put it back in the package.
Oh, God.
Ever so gingerly.
Well, okay, let's be fair. Bandai makes pretty decent shit. It's nice and strong. It may be over-engineered, but any of the problems they have in terms of, you know, strength and everything, can be rectified with gingerly handling the product. So
no, not the blue 171.
Or was it that?
The blue one, Cannon Fodder 171.
Yeah.
Has a tendency, like on some people have reported that those little triangle pieces, little black triangle lens pieces, have been broken straight out of the box.
Really?
Yeah, they will.
Mine haven't, but I have not transformed
it. Well, that sucks because I wanted to get one of those.
Yeah, me too, until I read about that.
The good thing is
they're
that
cheap.
Yeah.
The good thing is they're cheap, but that's because everybody knows.
Yeah. There are people that make, you know, some of the replacement parts on Shapeways. It's not going to be the same, obviously, but
close enough.
There is viable options to get it fixed, and yeah. So if you have one and it's busted, there's I forgot his name. Honestly can't remember.
It's Kurisama.
You know what? I think it might be Siegfried.
Oh, I don't know that guy.
He's the guy that I'm working with on another project that's coming out. The the Macross Plus drones.
Right.
So. Which that looks to be a really good kit. I'm doing the recasting for that. Mm-hmm. Trying to color cast it. I'll model kit.
Orange.
Yeah. Hopefully just minimum painting necessary, but yeah, I'm just gonna do some weathering, panel lining.
Nice.
Make it look nice and pretty, and I'm making the decals for it. So
beautiful. Jason, quick question. Going back to the VF-19 Advance. How does it compare to the Arcadia YF-19? If you had to choose one to buy, what would you go with?
Okay, this is where I split, because there's two different paths I could take. If I was going to handle the toy more, play with it more, you know, put it in different modes and do that, I would probably get the Arcadia one.
Okay.
Only because I know, you know, their products tend to be a little more beefier. To me, I actually like the shape of that a little bit more. If I was just going to display it in one mode, it would be the Bandai version. Only because it's got the armor parts. It looks great. All the Tampo printing on it. It looks really detailed. So it's one of those things that if you don't build models, you know, and you have the money to spend, I don't know why you'd spend that kind of money on something that you're just going to display. But as far as aesthetics, that one is the way to go.
Well, to be fair, when you say that kind of money, the Bandai one, regular retail price is much cheaper than the Arcadia.
Right.
However, it's all inflated because people know that this thing is going to be very, very popular, so all of the outlets are inflating the price. No one's getting it for what it's supposed to be retailing for.
That was in reference to that versus buying, like, say, a model kit and, you know, detailing it up. And, you know, I mean, if you really,
right.
If you really want to make it look beautiful, I would go with the, I believe it's Hasegawa's 148.
Okay, you're right.
19, and that is, I mean, that's probably the way to go. If you have the skills or you know somebody that you can pay to, you know, make it nice and pretty for you. But, you know, as far as the toys go between the two, the Bandai is much more better looking. Just doesn't compare, but...
Well, aren't the Bandai's... The Bandai VF-19 Advance is very technically more posable in Battle Royale mode, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
It appears to be. So. Yeah. But
They obviously designed it to be put in dynamic poses and stuff with the double jointed elbows and stuff like that. And also, they included that.
Was it pinpoint that barrier? Pinpoint, yeah.
And that is cool. That is a nice feature.
And the stand. And
that's a nice little gimmick. I was actually happy when I first saw it. I was like, nobody's ever really addressed this issue that this thing actually has a pinpoint barrier.
Well, that's not true. I mean, transformable toys, no. But Revoltech did it.
They did
really? Yes. Oh, that's right, they did. Yeah. They did, but they're 19 and 21.
Yep. And you can put them on the shield and everything. It's really cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep.
Awesome.
So there
you go. I'll be
more stuff to get.
Yeah.
Gotta look for it. So yeah, that's that on those. I like I said, the 171 I just got on Thursday, so I haven't had a lot of time to look through it, but
right.
It looks pretty. And they all look pretty, and that's why we keep buying them.
Yeah, I just got a 29 at Anime Expo, and it's the Isamu type.
Isamu type.
Yeah. Okay, well, no, it's the Isam type, according to the cardboard box, because there was a typo on the front. But anyway, I'm not really that big of a fan of the 29, but I like the Isamu color scheme.
And that's the one with the 136 on the shoulder, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which stands, since one is E, and three is Sa, and the six is Mu.
Right.
Right there, it's Isam. Isamu.
Right.
Yeah. Not Isam? Damn, I'm confused.
No, it's not Isam.
clever Isam, yeah, but boy.
It's, the 29 is a solid toy. I'd recommend it.
I thought it looked cool.
Yeah, no, it's right over, it's got a lot of gimmicks. It's got, like, missile pods that open up. It's got, these tornado guns that spin around. It's a good toy. If you want something that's like the 25, but want something that's less bare than the 25 that Bandai puts out, pick up one of the 29s. It's pretty neat.
And I think I think that version of the 29, I'm not sure, don't quote me on this, but I think it's like the least expensive out of all, what, four of them?
Is it really?
Yeah. It is. And I think it's because people don't know who Isamu was.
Yeah, people don't associate Isamu with the 29 either.
No.
So it's kind of like, but then again, nobody associated a 29 with Ozma either, but
that was weird. No, but I guess
it's Ozma is
more popular. That one was black and
Ozma is the more popular color. Ozma is a more popular character. I can't talk. Character. Yeah.
Well, you know, all of the 29 colors except for Altos are really cool.
Yeah.
And Altos is kind of gaudy, in my opinion. So anything is better than that.
See, I don't mind the 29 color. I've heard a lot of people say they really don't like the white and the red, but I think it looks fine.
I feel like...
To me, it looks like a candy cane.
So yeah.
I just want to bite it, you know?
But the 29 with Isamu's colors looks... Well, it's Isamu's color, so it's automatically cool. the Ozma color... No, hey... Shush. No,
The VF1S color was pretty awesome.
I think it's pretty good. It's okay.
I love the fact that it's got, like, this white, and then it's got, like, this yellow, and then, like, the canopy, and these little things are purple. Every time I see it, I always think of the Lakers. I'm like, I know Kobe flies that
thing. Okay, so there's our Morijima reference.
There you go.
Okay. Oh, God. I'll be right back. But yeah, if you want to get a good Bandai toy, pick up their 29. It's pretty decent. It's got a lot of gimmicks, and it's got a lot of moving parts on it, and it's good fun.
Out.
on the list is Macross the First, Volume 6, and we promised Gwen this a while ago. The cover has a really nice banner. See, the thing is, someone asked me a while back, I think it was Kyle, actually, who's gone to the bathroom right now, like, since it's gone into the flashback as of, like, two-thirds of the way through Volume 5, so it's, the attack on South Atari Island that supposedly happened on Christmas Eve, 2008.
I remember it well.
Yeah. And,
so long ago.
So there's the anti-unification army here, and there's one really, really cute female SV-51 pilot. And Kyle asked me, what's her name? And I looked all through Volume 5, and I was like, she's not named here. And she's actually listed on the cover here. If the banner is like, Mikimoto Haruhiku ga... I can't remember what eokaku as a egaku. Verb.
Egaku.
Egaku. Original story. So, drawn by Haruhiku Mikimoto, original story, Macross the First, Episode 0, VF1S, Roy Fokker, versus SV-51, Bishoujo Pilotal. So she's the beautiful girl pilot. That's her name.
Okay. Well, thank you, Richard. That's very insightful.
Yeah. Miss Beautiful Girl.
That's her
pilot.
Name.
She is pretty cute, though.
Bishoujo Pilotosan.
No, so, she really is adorable.
It's Tales of South Ataria. The island has been dropped for this volume. I thought it was Tales of South Ataria Island in Volume 5. But here's just this
Mikimoto
Tales
just...
of South Ataria. Phases 4 through 9 with no real end in sight. This is all stuff that was on Comic Walker. Where we're waiting like at least a month per issue.
Right.
And I don't know. Renato and I were going to do a whole thing about this, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. I don't think the story is progressing really fast enough at this point. I think it seems to be slowing down. Not enough is happening in each chapter. They keep promising this dogfight that kind of sort of happens towards the end.
Is it possible they're leading up to something with all the slowing in pace?
I would say that, except I've read Macross 7 Trash.
Either that or this is kind of turning into like a Dragon Ball episode.
Yeah.
I think I said this before, so this might be repeating stuff, but every single one of that I can think of Mikimoto's stuff starts off pretty well.
And then ends up flawless.
Meandering for like half a dozen volumes.
Right.
Like he's got two good volumes of Tankobon, really, and then it goes off on a tangent for no reason that you can think of. Did you ever read Marionette Generation?
I've looked at it. I haven't actually, like, sat down to read it.
It's really...
But I know it's like that.
It's an interesting concept.
Mm-hmm.
Again, for the first two issues, and there's a mysterious character, and then what happens is, like, weird stuff. Like, they get sucked into a video game for no reason. The story isn't about that at all. It just becomes about that. And then, I don't know what happens. And then, like, there's a huge, like, 1 or 2 or 3 year gap between the penultimate and the final volume. And and Mikimoto's final, liner notes, comment that he always makes on the inside cover.
Right.
Is like, I'm sorry. I just...
So he knows that he's just screwing with
him. He knows, he knows.
Well, with Macross 7 Trash, the problem was as it went on, they kept having more chapters that weren't actual chapters, but were intermissions that were much shorter and didn't have anything to do with the story. Not that there was a story by that point. And I think a lot of that is just like, okay, he didn't finish the latest chapter for that month. And so he could do this intermission really quickly and put that.
I don't know about that. Like, if you can't, if you've done maybe 60% of something, why not do the remaining 40% if you're gonna think of a new story and do another few pages? Like,
good question. Really, yeah, no, but that was just the impression I got, because as it went on, there were more and more intermission chapters.
There probably were. I think a lot of that were written for the Tankobon.
Oh, okay. Really?
I know from Records the First, weren't there a couple of those, like Minmay's flashback or something?
No, that was in New Taipei's.
Was it?
Yeah. No, for between Macross Ace or New Taipei's and like the published Macross the First, he's added a few pages here and there.
Yeah.
But there isn't an entire new chapter or anything.
The only intermissions I can remember from Macross 7 Trash were the appearance of Basara.
Basara actually appears in Trash.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a little bit.
Yeah.
I'll have to read that someday.
But
it starts off really good.
Yeah.
And then just kind of goes nowhere.
Peters.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mikimoto.
Right.
Well,
Jason, what do you think of it? You're the one who actually owns... Jason's the one who actually owns this book.
Okay. Well, I mean, obviously I can't read Japanese, but you did point out to me something that I just kind of thought of tonight. There's this part where mm-hmm. Chami is basically...
Trying to deactivate the active stealth on the SV-51
right.
that's coming in.
And so this kind of brought up an interesting question. In Macross Plus, they mention that the YF-19 and the YF-21 both feature an active stealth system. Okay, so if the SV-51 has active stealth, wouldn't that mean that the VF-1 has active stealth as well? I mean, logically concluding, okay, well, if this older fighter that...
Well,
you know,
technically...
You could probably ask this on a few different threads on Macross World, and they might be able to answer you.
I'm sure I could, but I'd have to sort through like about 20 pages of people bitching at each other.
Well, no, well, okay. Let me talk about this, because there
I think
are
it's
things...
all anime, which is an acronym meaning any notable inconsistencies may exist.
Well, okay. If you want to get really technical about it. There are things that Russian fighters can do that our planes can't do.
I think they always said that the SV-51 was more advanced than the VF-0, and the VF-1 was only based on the VF-0, so it makes sense. That,
yeah.
That VF-1 is not going to...
So you're saying that the SV-51 had active stealth, but the variable fighters never got them until the 19?
Probably.
Well,
that's like how many years is that? Like,
well, it's
30?
Just it's just
no, that's
50?
Like a 30-year gap.
Well, it's yeah. just a different variable fighters just didn't really have the emphasis on it.
Okay.
Whereas the anti-unification
army.
Anti-unification army. Thank you. Decided they needed stealthy stuff, whereas the UN decided, hey, we don't really need that yet.
Perhaps. Okay, but this is still hypothetically speaking.
Okay. This is still hypothetical. Yes, of course.
They shoot down a few SV-51s in Zero. I mean, we see that, you know. There's got to be some wreckage somewhere. Do you think that at some point they would have said, you know what, let's see what these guys have.
Yes, they explored that in Plus, obviously.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is Macross the First. It's a different continuity.
Well,
maybe
true.
The VF-1 does have active stealth here, but we don't even know if the SV-51 has active stealth in Macross Zero.
Right.
That's true.
That's very true. Yeah.
That's true. I just thought it was a very interesting...
And again, you could make a 20-page thread out of that.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I think that's the answer, really. It would make sense for the VF-1 to have it in this continuity.
Well, they probably all do.
They're speaking about it like it's not a
yeah, because she's already like oh, this thing has active stealth. I can break this.
Yeah.
So it's kind of
you know what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
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 So this is like technology that probably isn't new to them.
Well,
right.
that definitely makes a lot more sense.
Well, what if the 21 just has?
We talk about the technical.
What if the 21 just has better stealth? Like, what if it just has a higher
level of Astral
Maybe,
Stealth.
Yeah.
That's probably all it is.
But that was the thing that they kind of featured as far as like the new generation of
Well, because when Macross Plus came out in 1994, that was new.
Well, yeah, Active Stealth wasn't really a thing until modern times. They wouldn't have really known about that idea until 1990s.
Retcon,
I mean, if
monster,
you look at VF-17, why is it called the Stealth Valkyrie, the VF-17?
Well, it uses...
Well, it's only called that by Bondi.
Well, it... The VF-17 actually used passive stealth. Because passive stealth actually uses angular shapes in the aircraft to deflect radar waves, whereas active stealth...
You're sounding like Valkyrie pilots!
No, no, but...
Yeah, that's right. Let me explain it.
But by that point, they wouldn't need to make the fighter jet an angular shape because they would have active stealth. They wouldn't need to go back. It's
unless
like
their passive stealth is
it's like saying
really
we're,
good.
We're making biplanes now.
Yeah.
Just because.
Well.
Yeah. Well, maybe they wanted a plane design with the angular stealth
maybe
system.
Maybe it's cheaper to make.
Hey, here's the bottom line.
It's cheaper to make.
It's good for the story.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Because we want to see Shani freaking out on a keyboard, typing like 100 strokes a minute, you know, on this computer.
Yeah.
And with her crazy 10 fingers.
My God.
Going nuts.
Shami is my favorite bridge bunny.
Shami is awesome in this book. If you are a Shami fan, you need to pick it up.
She's awesome in everything.
Yeah, but she's especially awesome here.
No, like
you like her in the pachinko footage with... cosplaying as global.
That was pretty good too. Yes.
Can you please cosplay as Shami for me?
Shami cosplaying as global, please.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh my God.
You know me and my double Macross cosplays.
Yeah. I would die if you did that. Like I would just keel over and just.
Well, I just want to say I really like what Mickey Moto's doing with all the design work. Like you know, giving them kind of short sleeve. Uniforms, you know, for the tropical environment.
Because it's summer in space?
Yeah, it's good.
Summer in space.
Well, no, but this is on Atari.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, global.
And the fact that the higher your rank is, the longer your skirt is.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, that's like, always been a thing, hasn't it?
Is there a reason why, like, because Misa has a short sleeve uniform, which is totally appropriate for the climate, but Claudia is still wearing. You know, a long sleeve, you know,
because
coat uniform.
Maybe she's anemic.
Maybe Claudia's used to colder weather or warmer weather.
Mickey Mouse's illustrations are always kind of like they've got these tropes going on.
Yeah.
Claudia seems to always be touching the side of her head.
Maybe
anyone with glasses is always adjusting their glasses somehow. I'm talking about in his illustrations. Misa, he tends not to know what to do with her, so
she's
always
like, she was holding like something.
The clipboard.
Yeah.
It's always
the
clipboard.
Uh-huh.
I never saw her hold a clipboard in the show.
Well, maybe Mickey Moto just likes to have Claudia wear long sleeves because Claudia likes long sleeves. Maybe she just likes having her arms covered.
How do you know that?
I don't know. I'm just
do you have any proof of that?
Well then she is working in an air conditioned environment.
That's true. That's true. Maybe we're overanalyzing this just a little bit.
But I like that
overanalysis.
But I like that he's put in some tweaks in the uniform.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's new.
A short sleeve uniform, especially in a tropical environment. I mean, just the average day uniform that someone in the Navy would wear would be a short sleeve.
Well, I can tell you by wearing the uniforms myself that they are hot.
Yes. Yeah.
You want some overanalysis, though? Shami is front and center in this. Well, not front. Back and center. In this cover, and her breasts look bigger than I've ever seen them depicted.
Well, Shami is waifu material, so
really.
Well, you know, I think,
and it's not like me pointing out like breasts. It's him, Mickey Moto himself, pointing them out. Because if you open the inside cover, he has used that picture and zoomed in to her breasts to use as his profile picture. Literally.
You know Shami would be
that's
the most popular. No, hold up.
That's Mickey Moto.
If Macross were made today, it would be about the Bridge Bunnies.
Yeah.
You think so?
I think so.
That's why this whole story is here. Look,
because of all the Moe tropes going on right now.
The inside illustrations are all Illust Gallery. Misa there showing some leg room. There's Shami again, you know, with one knee-high sock and one other sock coming down. Nice. And she's grinning, going, hee-hee-hee. And then, is this the Bishoujo pilot?
Yes.
Okay.
Isn't that the Bishoujo pilot had
and no,
purple hair?
No boys. No men in this army club.
Renato's just like... He's just analyzing the shit out of this right now.
And it's like...
Well,
I'm flicking through this book, and I see no characters. It's all like hardcore planes flying around. So
gritty.
It's kind of you look at this cover, and you see grit, but then you open the book, and it's like it's like. Let me give you an audio guide to this book cover.
Gwyn's gonna listen to this and be like, I can't use any of this shit.
No, you know what? He's gonna hear it and he's gonna think, what the hell were they thinking? What were they drinking?
Blue Moon. You saw Miss Down.
I was just thinking a picture of this table when we're done.
Best advertisement for Blue Moon ever. Listen to this podcast.
I just want to know, is there any art for the VF4S, VF4ST, and VF4SP?
No.
What the hell?
Thanks.
You're welcome. Well, there's some art for the VF4, what's that? What is your variant of the VF? It's VF4 Kai.
Oh, okay.
It's available on the chests
not,
these two.
Yeah, but that's not official Macross setting.
No, but it's...
But there's nothing that denies it.
True.
Therefore, by default.
Everything and nothing is canon.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I'm not going to say my work is canon. That's bullshit.
Is he apologizing here?
No, but seriously.
前の5巻 から間が空いてしまいましたが、やっとの6巻です。So, like, the last volume was the fifth volume, and there's been quite a gap, and finally I'm able to deliver the sixth volume.
もともとは潜水艦のエピソード5巻収録だけの予定だった現場に本が当時の担当さんのリオスローの登場させたいという意見から発
言。 Hey, look, this is pretty revealing, actually. Originally, there was an episode that was supposed to have just one scene in a submarine, in the fifth volume, that was going to be a side story. But then, and he says, 当時の担当さん, the guy who was in charge of the story at the time,
mm-hmm.
said, no, have a VF0 in it. Put a VF0 in your story. And then that expanded into the whole Tales of South Ataria. それがいつの間にか最長エピソードになってしまいました。And then, before I knew it, that became the longest episode in the entire Microsoft series.
See, the thing is,
this is the thing. 当時の担当さん, it means like the guy who was in charge at the time. So like whoever is doing this now, is a different guy.
Okay.
So that's why it's so meandering.
I thought he was writing it.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, he is. But like you know, all manga. Like let's put this on the table. All manga is. The story is by the editors,
okay.
Right?
Well,
they tell
them. Okay, the thing I'm
unless
really worried
really
about this is that
have power.
Since it's basically
like
based on Gundam the Origin. I mean, no, it is. Macross
the
First
yeah.
only exists
Gundam
because of
yeah.
Gundam the Origin.
Yeah, same format. Ever.
And there was the one bit which I think I've mentioned before, where in Gundam Ace, you know, Gundam the Origin was serialized in Gundam Ace,
mm-hmm.
and it was going along fine with the story from the anime,
mm-hmm.
and then they had a little business reply fly, like business reply card, that said, would you like to see Gundam the Origin go into the past and explain everything that happened that led up to the Gundam story. I never sent that in, but I assume everyone else said yes, because for, like, soon after that, they went into that, and for the next 6 years of Gundam the Origin, that's what it was.
Well, is that the whole point of the name, Gundam the Origin?
Well, if you're thinking
origin?
Of it in English, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think they were. I think it's they're talking
not.
About because the Japanese used to call, or still do, call the original Gundam series Fasto Gundam.
Right.
Fasto Gundam. It's the first Gundam.
And so really, it's the origin of the franchise, really. That's what I
think. Right. So I'm worried that Mikimoto may be either on his own decision or under pressure.
He's
like, oh, hey, you've got to do this for like two-thirds of the whole series.
Yeah, probably. Then he says, well, I feel really ashamed to put my name on this because most of the mecha action scene, which is the whole bulk of the show, of this book,
is
done by the staff.
What? Yeah. He doesn't draw the mecha?
Have fun with that.
Yeah, I remember someone on Macross World a few years ago saying, like, wow, he does a really good job with the mecha.
Yes,
and it's like, yeah, anytime you see the mecha, it's not him.
And then he says, Fukki no Miss Macross hen mo sukoshi omachi wo. And he's like, we'll get to Miss Macross, don't worry.
Please wait
a bit for Miss Macross.
Oh yeah,
but no one's got that.
Well, no. But there's news about it because the VF0A and VF0S have been revealed. We haven't had a good VF0 in about 10 years now, except for the VF0D, but that doesn't really count because that's a new line. And,
but this is
a
new line.
Yeah. Well, as the first Valkyrie I've ever seen, the VF0S is kind of special to me.
Hey, Kyle is nostalgic for Zero. Macross Zero.
Well, he was like born at that time.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Well, no. That's like... As the VF0S was the first one I really, really was super interested in, because I saw the VF0S before I saw the VF1.
Yeah.
So...
I can understand that, yeah.
It's kind of special to me personally. I look forward to its release.
It's going
to
be really expensive.
Yeah, I know. I'm not looking forward to its price.
No.
I don't know if I'm going to get one, but the fact they're doing more is kind of...
Really? Well, you've just described it. I think you need to.
I might have to.
Yeah.
But I don't know. The VF0 is just beautiful to me. And according to the master file, it's literally just a transforming F-14 Tomcat, so... Whatever. It's literally like they took an F-14, and they said, modify this airframe to transform.
Right.
And I love that about it.
Yeah.
It's so...
This is a Top Gun fanboy right here.
I don't know. The VF0 is just kind of special to me. It's kind of the new VF1.
Yeah.
It is nice.
It's a cool design.
I mean, even the original ones, when I came out, I was like, you know, these actually look pretty damn cool.
Yeah, I mean, say what you will about Macross Zero, the mecha designs are really, really good. And the VF0 is probably one of the best Valkyries made in the past 20 years.
Well, I still have my SV-51s, too. And I
do you really?
Love those designs, yeah.
Oh, those designs are very interesting.
Yeah. Just because it's so awkward. And
yeah. Because it fits well with the Birdman motif that they're using in...
Is there a release date set?
Again, Adrian is the one who's...
Adrian would know about that.
I have no idea.
Well, Adrian, if you're listening to this 6 months from now, let me know when that VF0 is released, because I probably will have one by then. But, whatever.
He's like, let us know how it is, even though I'll have it by the time this comes out.
Yeah.
Actually, Andrew Colley is like, Kyle, you want to buy my VF0A? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Because he's going to be getting the new ones, so he's like...
He'll probably do a review and compare them both and then give you the old one.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah. I still kind of want to get the new one eventually.
Oh, yeah, same.
Can
yeah,
I talk about my run-in with Sonoyama?
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, sure.
Go ahead.
So, at all the cons, especially AX, as we said that we got back from the con. I like to cosplay for Macross. And at AX, I was cosplaying as Hikaru Ichijo. And while at the satellite booth keeping Richard company, this elderly gentleman came up to us, and I think he actually recognized your cosplay first,
yeah.
Ahun, who was cosplaying as Shin Kazama from Area 88. And so Eric has some Area 88 news. He revealed to Kyle that the creator of Area 88, Kaoru...
Shintani,
yeah. is going to be making an appearance at Comic-Con this, this year,
yeah.
and he's going to be continuing Area 88.
Well, no. He's doing artwork for the convention.
Oh,
he's doing the title card. No.
Oh, okay.
He's doing artwork for the convention, and he's doing it in the style that he did back in the early 80s.
Oh, that's what he meant.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And I've seen the artwork. It's beautiful. Check it out.
So, basically, the creator of Area 88 is doing more things. And then he turned to me and saw I was cosplaying as Hikaru. And what did he say? He was just like, oh, I see that you are cosplaying from...
Makuros.
No, he was all like, no, you would be from... And then he paused. He's like, Robotech? And I was like, no, Macross. He's like, oh, okay. Then do you know Macross Frontier? And I was like, of course I know Macross Frontier. And he gave me one of the little postcard booklets that they premiered at the Macross...
Art exhibition.
The Macross Art Exhibition. Was it in Tokyo?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, so I started talking to the guy, and he's the director of that art exhibition, or was he the curator of the museum?
Curator
of the museum, okay.
No, he sets up, like, anime exhibitions.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah.
And so I got all this free stuff from him just because I was cosplaying as Macross, so we should get some more Macross cosplayers out there.
Okay.
So the Robotech panel.
Yeah, so Kyle went to the...
This is the ultimate clusterfuck of any panel I have ever seen. But, like, I have never seen a panel with less content.
Bear in mind, I walked out of last year's panel.
This was worse than last year's panel. They actually showed stuff at last year's panel. This was nothing.
Oh, because last year they had the
Academy.
And that just pissed me off so much that I walked out.
They paid money for the Kickstarter that they were planning that then failed, and then they cancelled it before they met the deadline so that it wasn't a failed project.
But
it
the
was
thing
like,
is...
We cancelled it, it's okay. We didn't fail. We just decided not to play the game anymore.
That's just the thing. In this panel, they fully admitted. They said, everyone... Okay... What did they say? They said, so this time
it
we
failed.
Have...
It failed.
They did say that it failed. They said, you all know that we've got a Robotech live-action movie happening, and we've got so many great people on it, and we've got all the things, and it's not going to be like we've done before. Like, I'm sure you guys all
we've
know about...
We've got James Wan, we've got Chuck Roven, we've got Lawrence Bastis,
we've got Tobey Maguire,
we've got...
Tobey didn't say that.
Leonardo DiCaprio, we've got so many great writers,
but
like
Lawrence
Kasdan is still writing.
Okay.
So he talks about how this is totally going to succeed, and then he says you probably all know about, like, last year when we talked about the Robotech Academy Kickstarter, and you all know that... And he pauses, and he says, that it pretty much failed. And then everyone kind of, like, you know, there's, like, this murmur, and he's like, yeah, we failed. Like, he full-on admits that failed.
Who is this?
Kevin McKeever.
Kevin. Oh, wow.
I want to say, related to that, later on, he goes back to it and says... Something about the aging or the aged and the irrelevant can bounce back.
Oh, yeah, so...
As proven from Robotech Academy, that Robotech can bounce back because now we have the live-action film.
Okay,
great,
so,
but your own property is aged and irrelevant, and that's why you keep releasing it on DVD every year.
So that question, or that answer...
My word.
That answer was spawned from the question... If the Robotech live-action movie fails and the whole panel burst out in booze...
Oh, that was that guy who asked the question, right?
And so the guy said, well, if it fails, what will be the course of Robotech from there? Will it just quit? Will you guys stop? Like, what is your plan?
What is the future of Robotech?
And that's what Kevin's response was, as you saw from the failed Robotech Academy, he said failed again... He says, Robotech, and people have always said that Robotech, our worst critics say that Robotech is aged and irrelevant.
That's
but you
it.
See from Robotech Academy bouncing into the live action movie that we can bounce back from failure.
as will happen if this movie fails, which it will not, and then everyone burst in cheering.
Okay, I wasn't there at the panel.
How many people were there, by the way?
I want to say, let 100? Me say...
100?
No, not even. Mm. I
Tom
would say...
100?
I would say somewhere between 50 and 100, but...
Renato, how many people were at your panel about the future of...
It was packed.
There were definitely more people at Renato's panel.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
But he had a bigger room, too.
So,
Renato had a bigger room... The Robotech room, for what it was relatively filled decently.
Wait, that's not fair because I'm not competing with Robotech.
Well, no, but it just shows that Renato was a bigger deal than the Robotech 30 panel.
I hope I'm less
aged
and
more relevant.
So I would
say that everybody is, like people aren't really all, there really isn't a market for Robotech and everybody's chasing after the original English Renato.
And the market for me.
Classic Renato.
So to sum up the panel, they started out the panel saying, you know, we've got it, what did they say? We've been digging through the Robotech vaults, and we found out that a lot of our, storekeeping, or our records, that was it, our records have not been very kept very well. So we've been going through, and we've been finding all this stuff that we've been getting new licenses, and so they now have, you know, a new soundtrack that's coming out that was supposed to be released 10 years ago. They've got skateboards! They've got a new deal with Bait to sell t-shirts at 80s tees.
And it is
so
Bait.
Basically what it is that they found that Macross Mecha portfolio with the 10 pictures that they can now use for everything.
Yeah. And they're also releasing the brand new, never-before-released Robotech 30 toys. And they're actually just recasts of the Do You Remember Love toys released about 10 years ago.
No.
They're not that old.
They're 2008.
Wait. You forgot the new artwork.
The new artwork
for the Robotech 30th anniversary album. And it's Minmay straddling the missile. Tommy Yoon's art that he drew, almost a decade ago.
Wow. Oh, yeah, she's sitting on the gun.
But it's
and
new.
It has, like...
Well, he did draw a new picture for the Chinese convention.
That's true. That was new.
Yeah.
But that was
so,
not in
you know,
panel.
It's like
a plus
one,
the Robotech Voltron art.
Yeah, he did the covers for Robotech Voltron. So, you know, that's six pictures in 1 year. I can understand that. That's a lot.
That's a high output.
Okay, so the point is they didn't really announce anything that we didn't already know about.
Or didn't already have for 10.
Merchandising wise.
Yeah.
It was all just it's like that recast, repainting.
Yeah.
Mecha. Let's milk that for what we can, and then licensees that for products that people don't really. I mean, do people really want skateboards? Do people really? I mean, wall scrolls.
Again, the target audience for Robotech as of right now is like people in their late 30s, early 40s. They're old fans. Are the only ones who are probably listening right now. So
maybe
it's like,
they
why
reissue,
kids?
Repackage. Sadly, this was your life.
There's your song.
That was beautiful, Richard. No, I'm getting a song. Don't worry.
But those as a merchandising, you know, they're not there to make a whole lot of money. Because how many skateboards are you gonna sell? I mean that license probably was, you know, a few thousand dollars, and we're talking like not even like $5,000 for the license,
right?
For that company.
It's just because they could.
And the Wall Street
looks like it's keeping the name out there. Yeah. It's keeping the copyright, the trademark.
Yeah.
Well, it keeps it alive.
That's pretty much all it is.
The wall scrolls, I mean, those look like they're print on demand.
They're wall scrolls for life support.
Yeah. And I will say this about the 1-100 Toynami toys. Yes, those are probably just molded old toys that, you know, the same ones that broke when you pulled them out of the box. But at least they do have the new GBP, so...
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to pay money, you're pretty much paying for that because you can... use the same ones.
Oh, the fact that like the normal ones are $60 and then there's the exclusive San Diego Comic-Con one, which is $99.
Holy shit.
Dollars, which is the Stealth Valkyrie.
You could buy a high metal for that, no
Veritech.
Problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're the same price.
Yeah.
They're $100.
The high metal is such a better product for the money.
It is.
Yeah, but it doesn't have the GPB armor.
The new one does.
Yes, it does.
It does.
The new
$100?
The new one does.
$100.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because they weren't $100 before. They were like $5,000 or something.
Okay.
The new one's coming out.
$5,000 yen, not $5,000.
Oh, sorry.
$5,000.
I think the big thing that obviously they were coming into the convention to talk about was the movie.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
And yeah, and the movie, which you know the big Sony Pictures deal for it, and they talked about it at length.
Yeah, so after they finished the merchandising, they moved on to the movie, and they started, the rest of the panel was about the movie.
Yeah, and...
not even.
Again, you know, they talked a lot about the two producers, you know, and they definitely are guys with, you know, a long list of credits.
Mostly 300 credits, because we really want 300 in our Robotech movie.
No, but you have 300
really
good.
Good.
Little girls.
The producers are quite competent gentlemen, and, you know, they have a long history in the industry, which is true. Okay. However, this is one of many, many projects that these guys are working on.
Yep.
And they're reframing it that this is like, you know, it's right on the front burner. It's going to happen. And, you know, we have James Wan directing it without, you know, without mentioning that this is the third film in James Wan's pipeline.
Yep.
He's first got to direct The Conjuring 2 later this year for release next year. And then he immediately goes into doing Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes into Robotech. I think that's a very good point. If he goes into Robotech, it's this third movie down the pipeline.
Because as you mentioned to me that, you know, after Aquaman, they're probably going to start discussing Avengers, Justice League.
Yeah, he very well could do that. I mean, he is an accomplished director. He's got credits, and if he is the guy who directs Robotech, they would be very, very lucky. And
I mean, he is a big name.
He is.
And I do have to say that Sony is pushing this. Seems to be pushing this way more than Warner Brothers ever did.
Well,
I mean, they're kind of like, we signed this commercial director who's never done a feature film.
Well, at least they signed someone like James Wan instead of someone who does car commercials.
Right.
this is the first time we've attached a big name as a director.
Right.
They've talked a lot about, you know, they were talking about Lawrence Kasdan.
That was
a
big
number of different writers. I mean, thank God they didn't keep mentioning that. Which, you know, obviously that would make people at Sony very unhappy if they were talking about all these people who were working on the project when it was over at Warner Brothers. But there were, you know, half a dozen different writers or writing teams who worked on Robotech. One of them of which was Lawrence Kasdan.
The first one of which.
Right. Well, I think he might have been like this.
I think it was
second.
I think he was second.
He was second or third.
He was second, I think.
Because Harmony Gold goes into the directors and the writers' credentials. They had 300. They've done 302, whatever, blah, blah, blah,
blah.
They did
G.I. Joe, Rise of Cobra.
You know, they did all this stuff.
Well, for the record, Harmony Gold doesn't select who writes.
Oh, they did. It's Sony, right?
No, it would be Sony.
Okay, so... I wasn't there at the...
Is
there anything else that...
There was... The big thing was the mention of the live-action movie and the directors and whatnot that were associated with it.
They went through their credentials.
They went through their credentials. They started talking about it for the rest of the time, pretty much.
Yeah. They made mention that someone was sitting down. This deal has only been made, like, yesterday.
Yeah
he's like, yesterday.
You know what's real interesting? Because here, finally, a piece of news, of real news.
Mm-hmm.
They announced the writer of it. His name is Michael B. Gordon. And I'm looking at the Wikipedia page here. They announced that in February. that he was going to be the writer. And then looking a little bit more, this guy Michael Gordon is his previous credits were that he was the assistant to Mark Canton, one of the producers. And he has only two credits.
What are those?
Screenplay on 300. Okay. One of three writers on 300.
So he's not the writer.
So he's 100.
He's 100. Okay. I guess you could look at it. He's 100. And then
remember, that's three credited writers.
Right. Okay, three critter rides, so which is not, right, it's not abnormal in Hollywood for that
time. Right. Yes.
So he's credited for, as one of the three screenwriters on 300. And then he's credited with a story credit for G.I. Joe 2, the Rise of Cobra.
You're fired. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
And story credit, I mean, that's like Gensaku. You know, that can mean anything.
It can mean anything.
Well,
but
he's one of three on the credited on the story.
Yeah.
Right? So, and Rise of Cobra, that was the first one, right?
It's often like an excuse. It can mean screenwriter if, for some contractual reason, there's another person that needs to be credited as screenwriter.
Right.
So, okay, great. You know, he worked on those two movies. You know, hey, best of luck. You know, the Robotech's a hard nut to crack. I mean, for any writer.
Right.
Yeah. And they've had a lot. They've had more than half a dozen writers or writing teams on it already. The idea that this guy, is going to come in and solve everything and create a script that's going to justify spending hundreds of millions of dollars to make, you know.
So, point is, we had lots of fun experiences at Anime Expo 2015.
And at Finnegan's Wake.
Hmm?
Yeah, lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake.
Alright, I guess that wraps up then.
Is that it?
Okay, so wait.
Trying to do is
damn right. You, Renato.
Yeah, but what? But why?
Because what you can do it better than I can.
No, but I mean, what? Why is that relevant right now?
I don't know. What? I just.
Oh, okay. That's the ending scene.
Because that's the ending song that he wants for this.
Right, so okay, that means don't have to edit any more music in. So we should see this episode live tomorrow there.
Okay, so we should, like, stop it in the middle of the sentence, and then there's an invisible to be continued.
Well, what about Macross Worldcon? Have we talked about that
Oh,
yet?
No, we haven't.
That's kind of a thing.
We did announce that I'm going to be Shannon. No, I'm kidding.
Macross Worldcon 2019
has
exactly.
Yeah. If this comes out before October 17th,
Gwen,
everybody should go to Macross Worldcon, which is going to be held in Torrance, California, October 17th, and 2015. Yes, it's going to be a really good time. It's a small con, but it has the Kyle Dunn endorsement, so don't miss it.
Yes, and there's special guests that we're working on, and we're not going to say anything other than that, but, you know, either way, we're looking at a really good convention this year.
You might get to meet some Macross Speaker Podcast members there.
Oh, you will definitely meet some Macross Speaker Podcast members
there. It's that exclusive. But, yeah, last year was a really good time. Is there anything you'd like to add, Richard?
Last year was a really good time.
We got super hammered and podcasted.
However, I expressed my dream last time,
yes.
Which did not get fulfilled.
What's your
until
this?
This Anime Expo, in that I finally got to wear a Ranka wig.
Open Richard,
which I
do. This sounds dirty.
Which hey. I do have pictures of, and I shall upload.
Yes. No, don't upload them. Just send them to me.
Okay, I'll do both.
Send them to Gwen.
Yeah. Oh God!
That'll be the
no. Don't send them to Gwen.
That should be the cover for the podcast for our initial podcast.
Yeah, we'll wait for everybody to come back. We'll pose. Take a nice picture.
Is there a way you could set a timer on the camera?
And ladies and gentlemen, it has been a pleasure podcasting with you tonight.
And I just wanted to say thank you for coming out. Thank you for listening. And Gwyn, thank you for editing this.
Gwyn is going to hate us for this. And Gwyn, if you're listening, and I know you are, whatever you do, do not do what, like, the usual stuff that you do when it's, like, me and, like, nobody else, which is just, like, putting, like, Mean Gene loves you. And there's so much about this that looks fake. Like, not just... Thank you, Annika. Not just... not. I almost made Annika spit her drink. That was great.
And her drink is red, so it looks like she's throwing up blood.
Yes.
This is what I do every time I see the name Robotech, so... I will do it.
I will buy him a... keyboard, like...
from Kyle Dunn.
Yeah, he'll just use keyboard and all.
Yeah, but then he reads from Kyle Dunn, I ain't using this shit.
He doesn't know me.
He doesn't know me. He knows now, because you're from that podcast, butt figures.
Well, you are.